You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is Torture Cast. Welcome, everybody, to The Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants, the greatest team in the history of the major leagues, and all Yankees fans who are mad at me for saying that on Twitter. Sorry, we have more wins total. You have more championships, fine, but we have more wins total, so I'm sticking with it. I think I'm right. I think you're wrong. My name is Willie Dills, and this is episode 44 of The Torture Cast, the Willie McCovey episode, stretch. The man, the Hall of Famer, 521 career home runs, and one of my namesakes, one of my famous San Francisco Giants namesakes. So I love that guy, and I'm joined, of course, by my two co-hosts. First, we'll introduce Chad King. Welcome back to the show, Chad.
Hey, strangers, how you doing? Glad to be back.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a long time. We had a little off season ourselves. We had to come down off of the excitement of winning the World Series and the excitement of interviewing Brian Srabian. So
it was a well-deserved break, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just a hangover.
And of course, we're also joined by Ben Lee. What's up, Ben? How you doing, man?
Hey guys, boy, we sure haven't recorded an episode in quite a stretch, huh?
Yeah, quite a stretch. Let's see if we can not stretch this out into. It's probably going to be hard for us not to go for 2 hours tonight, but let's see if we can keep it quick to the point. There's a lot to talk about, but we're not going to go through all of spring training, all of that stuff, because that already happened. We're in the season now. We're a week in, and the Giants are currently on TV winning 3-2 against the Rockies in Game 7 of the season. So we got a lot to talk about just season-wise. So we're going to get right into it. Let's jump in. Let's talk about the fact that the Giants, this is something that as a fan I'm extremely happy about and proud of being a fan of an organization that does this. The Giants have returned with 21 of the 25 members from the 2012 World Series champion team. And there's not a lot of fans of any baseball team that has won it all that can say the next year they fielded pretty much the same ball club. I can't remember the last time this has happened.
A 97 Florida Marlins?
No. Not even close.
Definitely.
No, that was
because we all know that Jeffrey Loria really likes to make sure he has a lot of consistency in his life.
That's right. Yeah. Their plan is win every 7-8 years and then dump everybody.
And just blow the team up. Exactly, or attempt to win and then blow the team up again.
Yeah. If they win or they don't win, blow it up.
So about those Toronto Blue Jay Florida Marlins.
Yeah, that's right.
Toronto Marlins.
The Blue Jays do definitely look like they're going with the Marlins, the whole plan that they've followed for a long time. They're going to really make a run at it, though. That is a strong ball club. But it's hard to, I mean, obviously the power rankings.
Well, because Giancarlo Stanton is as strong as the entire ball club put together.
Yeah, that's a big boy right there. But basically, you know, it's hard to, I know the power rankings and everything still have the Nationals basically as the top team in Major League Baseball. But it's hard to pick against the World Series champion team that then brought basically the same team back with actually some positive, I think, pieces on top of it when you consider that Aubrey Huff is now gone and we brought back Torres and obviously, Noonan and Terrio. I think that's kind of a toss up.
Carras, a little bit of a push.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a. I mean, I like Terrio a lot.
I would take Terrio over Noonan given the choice.
Yeah,
but
with
I'm not upset about Noonan.
No. No, absolutely not. And I don't think Terrio had a place here, so I think Noonan's the right call.
I feel like Noonan had it coming. He's been putting up decent, not spectacular, but decent numbers for a long time in the minors.
He's worked his way up. I think he's hit every single stop along the way, and he's done
sometimes
well at every
more
single
than once.
One. So, yeah. So, you know, he's young, and he shows a lot of promise, so I'm really happy to see him up on the big team. And, you know, I do think that it's, you know, all the baseball analysts still are picking teams like, you know, the Reds, a lot of people say, are another, you know, still great. The Nationals, obviously. Obviously, you've got to talk about the Blue Jays. There's a lot of talent in the Eastern Conference and the American League as well. The Eastern Conference. I know, it's like the NCAA. I'm just, everything's a conference, right? But, you know, I mean, there's a lot of talent out there as well. There's the American League West looks really strong this year.
And Houston is looking pretty good.
Yeah, Houston. They're probably going to take it all, you guys. But, you know, I mean, there's a lot of really great teams out there. But the fact is, 21 out of 25 guys come back from the World Series champion team. So, Chad, would you say, take yourself totally out of being a Giants fan, would you say that you have to pick the Giants as the favorite?
Well, ESPN apparently doesn't think so. Did you see that?
No, of course not. They had
43 basically people on their paycheck that, you know, did their little preseason baseball predictions. 23 of them did choose the Giants to win the West. Okay, fine. That's fair. None, zero of the 43 chose them to win the World Series.
Wow.
How can you have 23 pick them to win the West, a few others throw in the wild card, and none of them, not a single one, including a couple guys around the Bay Area here, chose them to win the World Series? I don't get it. They won two out of the last three, bringing most of their team back, and not one single analyst said, you know what? I think they could do it again.
Well, just based on probability, one out of 23 would have to pick the Giants, you know?
Well, that's what's so astounding about it.
Well, no, because then you're suggesting that somebody would have picked the Astros.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, there's an argument to be made that it's a good idea to go ahead and go to Vegas and always pick the team that has no chance, because the odds are that eventually
just put a little bit of money on it,
and
at some point you will end up making so much money back.
At some point it will be the Mets, you know, and nobody will see it coming. But, you know, I think that ESPN has constantly had this kind of East Coast bias. Obviously, most of their writers see those East Coast teams more often, and they're more aware of how good those teams are. Obviously, there's a lot of teams that have really high payrolls over there and a lot of talent. So, you know,
a lot of teams have made some pretty solid moves in the offseason, to be fair.
Absolutely.
You know,
there's some strong teams out there.
I mean, Toronto is making the most interesting push I've seen in a while. They're like, let's just take the everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, they just claimed Edwin Gonzalez.
Well, not to mention the Dodgers. I mean, not to mention the fact that we are in a division with the team that has an astronomical payroll.
All of the money.
Yeah, an astronomical. It's a ridiculous payroll that they got going this year, and already they've been hit with some weird injuries, and they definitely look
pitching wise. Yeah,
they look suspect. I gotta say, already out of the gate. I mean, you'd expect a team that spent that much money to come out and be red hot to begin the season, but
hey, they totally swept the Pirates, man.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true. That, hang your hat on that, Dodger fans. So, you know, I think it's a little bit of a travesty that no one's going to pick these guys again. But you know what? I think
that's
we're going to pick them,
though,
right?
Last year and in 2010. I mean, it's the same thing.
Well,
for some reason, the Giants always build this team that I think people who are more familiar with the team do think they have a legitimate chance just because of the moxie or whatever. They don't have the big stats. They don't have the big numbers, but maybe it is. Maybe it is
the whole point, though. That's
exactly.
Yeah, that's why we have a section called "Why We Will Win It All," no matter how bleak the numbers look until we're mathematically eliminated in 2011.
Exactly. Six,
as we find out, like, why we will win it all next year. But you know, it's the thing about the Giants isn't that they have Posey, and when you look up and down the lineup, nobody's going to look at the rest of the lineup and go, "So that guy, real impact player." Whereas you look through the Dodgers lineup and there's, you know, two or three guys that somebody looks at and goes, that guy in and of himself could probably turn this lineup around.
Sure, but for a long time, we didn't have anybody like Hunter Pence.
Sure.
You know? Now we have Hunter Pence for a full year, and he's already started off showing us that he's not going to be
nicer.
Like last year. You know, he's
getting his ball.
Like
he's getting his bat under balls. Nothing sounds okay about that sentence. But you know, they've been talking a lot about backspin, and you could actually see it. Willie and I were at the game yesterday, and I was actually along the Giants dugout side, and you saw Pence when he was actually standing in the on deck circle and taking practice swings. It looked like the most awkward thing because it looked like he was trying to play golf. All of his swings were really low. And then I realized that there's a point to that. He's trying to get more backspin on his hits, but he's swinging the bat at like his feet. And I'm just like, so all they have to do is pitch it at your eyes? Like,
well, what's going on here? He's just trying to flatten his swing out is really what he does. Like, it's a weird looking thing. And he really is. And there was a good article recently. I can't remember who wrote it, but talking about how Hunter Pence is really a throwback player. Because if you look at all the great players.
McCovey Chronicles had a good one of those.
Is that who it was?
They were showing some video of the Giants at Seal Stadium in 58 and said, all of these guys swing like Hunter Pence.
Yeah, it's they really run true. Like him. They throw like him. They, you know, mm-hmm. he's got that really. They, you know, before everything was kind of the sweet science of a swing, there was people just kind of figuring it out on their own. You know, barnstorming and just playing baseball all the time, and they just figured out a way to swing that worked for them. And this is really what Hunter Pence does. And he runs weird, he throws weird, everything he catches balls weird, everything he does is weird because he's just kind of that's his natural way to go about doing things. And you see this in every sport. There's a guy, you know, Sean Marion in basketball, the weirdest looking shot you've ever seen in your life, and it works for him. And there's always guys who will figure this out. And that's really, you know, he looks like the guys from the 30s, guys from the 20s, the 40s, you know, the guys who just kind of figured out how to play baseball on their own. And he's got something going for him. So I'm not going to argue with how he does it.
They'll cast him for the remake of 8 Men Out. So it'll be perfect. He's got a second career.
You know, Shoeless Joe Jackson had a really funky looking swing too, actually.
Yeah,
you know, people said like he was smooth as hell, but you look at those videos of some of those old players, and none of it looks like the players you see today. None of it. It's a totally different ball game now. And the pitching motions as well.
For every sport, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, just the ways that guys run, ways that guys swing now is completely, like, philosophy is on, it's all changed. But Hunter Pence is enough of an athlete that whatever is most natural for him is going to be successful. Whereas for some guys, you know, you hear a lot of talk about, like, well, maybe if you try this in your swing, it's going to clean it up. It's pretty clear that, you know, other than trying to figure out what was happening with him last year, guys haven't done a lot to try and fix Hunter Pence.
No.
And that hasn't necessarily been an issue because it works so well for him. This isn't like Aaron Rowand and the penis bat waggle where it was like, okay, really try and fix it. And he was like, no. And clearly the results weren't matching up for an extended period of time. Like,
yeah. Like as you get older, you can't pull stuff off like that, you know?
Yeah. And
like,
we haven't seen enough of Pence yet.
Julio Franco, who can like put the bat, like hitting the back of their ass. Yeah. And then make it work. You know, it's just not everyone can do that into their 40s. So, you know, guys like Rowand, it stopped working at some point. And I think Hunter Pence, you know, maybe as he gets older, he's got to figure it out. He's still a young guy. But I also think about this with Tim Lincecum. He's had that funky delivery for so long. There may come a time where his body just doesn't contort in that way and get the type of velocity and movement that he got when he was younger. And, you know, his body was more rubber, you know. Now he's getting a little older. You may have to kind of tone that down a little bit. We'll see. But
sure. But I feel like the worst thing you could do to Lincecum would be to try to get him to adopt a regular form of mechanics because his body just wouldn't know what to do with it.
No, it would take him forever to adjust, and then you'd lose another season trying to figure that out. So,
absolutely. So
really exciting though to watch these guys get back on the field, and we've had a couple of guys get really hot. A couple of guys are cold. We'll talk about that more later. But let's talk about the surprises on this team. There's only a couple really. I mean, we knew Torres was going to make the squad. But, you know, really, we weren't sure who that second backup infielder was going to be besides Joaquin Arias. And turned out
Nick Newman was looking at Tony Abreu for a while.
Oh, absolutely. That's, I assume.
Tanaka,
though, he played himself out pretty early in spring training.
Yeah, mostly with the game. He's in Fresno playing second base right now. He's been pretty kind of average so far.
He just doesn't have a lot of tools, so he has to play well or else it's not going to work. You know, he's not going to be a guy who's going to, like, you're not going to say, oh my god, the upside on this guy is amazing, so we'll put up with a little bit of a curve here. That's not going to happen with him. Newman, on the other hand,
he passed up $3 million in Japan. I mean, that's how badly he wants to play over here.
Yeah.
So I think that's why Bochy, you know, kept him in camp a little bit longer because he knew he was dedicated and really had the passion to try and make this team, but he just didn't quite show it.
No, just they never gelled for him. But Noonan really surprised and turned a lot of heads, I think. Everybody knew about his ability, I think. I don't think that was a surprise. But I don't think everybody thought that this was going to be the year he was going to break through and make the squad. And it was pretty cool to see him actually do that. You know, he's been in the minors for, what, 6-7 years now, I think?
Six years, at least.
Okay. So, you know, he's obviously not, he's not a phenom. He's not, you know, one of those guys coming up when he's 22. But, you know, he looks good out there. A couple of balls, though, when he was playing shortstop yesterday, I think Crawford would have had, and they kind of ate Noonan up. But, that's another thing. He's got to get used to the speed of Major League Baseball. What you're seeing in spring training isn't what you're going to see once the season starts, obviously. So I think he's still got, you know, give him a little bit more time up here. Give him a little more time to see actually how quick those balls are going to come at him. And I think he'll be just fine. I think he's actually going to be a nice solid guy, you know, to back people up. And he could play a couple spots in the infield. So with him and Arias, we kind of got everything covered there. So I'm happy to see him on the team. And then I was a little surprised to see us grab another catcher. I don't know about you guys. Were you guys surprised to see that?
Well, considering who we had on the in the depth charts, yeah, I was a little surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I figured Pablo is kind of your third catcher option, and you can get away with just Sanchez and
Posey. I think they've been, it's been so long since he's been a catcher. I think they've started steering away from using Pablo as the third catcher, unless it's a postseason roster. Like, there's no reason to push that. But, and also, I mean, Hector really, besides getting hurt, Hector really just didn't have a great showing at the during spring training. And in my mind, Hector still kind of hasn't. You know, I've never, like, other than when he first came up, it's been a while since I've been particularly impressed by Hector, and that's kind of where I'm at right now. And for a backup catcher, that's fine. That's the reason you keep him with the club and you start playing Johnny Manel every day in Fresno, or you keep him with the club and you play Andrew Susak every day in Double A, because if you're starting to get the opinion that Sanchez is no longer really going to be this like star stud catcher of the future, you know, when he first came up, we all worried, oh no, how are we going to get at bats for Sanchez and Posey and Belt and all these guys? And all of a sudden it's like, yeah, actually Sanchez, not really an issue.
Yeah. And he's a little bit, you know, really where he's kind of hurt his value is actually as a catcher. I mean, we all think that he's going to be fine as a hitter. He's not going to blow everybody away, but he's
250, 270, and he's going to have some pop, sure.
Good enough stats for a catcher on most teams. But the thing is that what he's done as a defensive catcher has really been poor, not just throwing people out. I know he's had some arm problems and stuff, but not just that, but framing pitches looks to me like a big problem for him. Yeah. Like, I'm watching Lincecum throw to this guy, and I'm thinking, why doesn't Lincecum want Posey behind the dish? That's really weird. I would think Lincecum would be pining to get Posey back there, because there is pitches, definitely. And Lincecum walked, what, seven in his first start? Okay, mm-hmm. So he walked seven in his first start. There was a lot of close pitches.
Too. I mean,
yeah, there were some pitches that I thought should have been called strikes, but the way that Sanchez caught them, they didn't look like strikes. You know, like Posey does something that a lot of catchers do, which is, I think, start his glove a little lower and just tilt upwards to actually make the catch, right? You see a lot of like Yadier Molina does
that. Get
that
elbow down, so yeah, it's you set it.
Imagine if you're the umpire and you're looking from behind, you don't see a lot of movement. You just see the glove come up and receive the ball. If the glove starts above the ball, you see this jerking downward to catch it. That's going to look like that ball missed, you know? And there's a lot of stuff he's doing where his elbow is kind of flying out and he's stabbing at these balls. He needs to just move his glove as minimal as possible when he's catching these pitches.
That's one of the things they used to really say, you know, give a lot of credit to Posada and Molina for on the Yanks, was that they were so good at framing pitches that pitches that might be outside to other umpires look like they were inside a little better. And that's something, it's an underrated part of the catching game. And I wouldn't say that it's, you know, necessarily a reason like in and of itself. But when you combine it with a lot of the other stuff that Sanchez has just kind of not been doing as well as Posey, I'm almost curious to see Quiroz behind the plate a little bit and get a feel for how he catches, because we've seen him a lot with like a lot of with other AL West teams. I mean, he's floated around the division a bit, but I'm just kind of curious to see how he works with this staff.
Yeah, well, obviously this staff is probably one of the most pleasant staffs to work with, because of the fact we don't have guys who have really weird stuff. We just have a lot of guys who kind of stay around the zone. Don't have
a
lot of funky
stuff. It's not
stuff
easy. It's not necessarily easy stuff to catch either.
True. No, that's
true. Especially guys like Tim.
Yeah. No, Tim Lincecum, you got to be willing to get on your knees and stop balls.
You're going to have to block a few.
Yeah. Jeremy Affeldt, you got to be ready to take a couple scuds.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it's one of those things that's going to hold Sanchez back unless they really get to work on his receiving, because it's right now it's leaving a lot to be desired. And Lincecum obviously was wild on his own. No matter who was back there, he was going to walk some guys that day. He was struggling with the fastball command. But the fact is, he didn't get help from his catcher, and that's going to really hurt him in the long run, especially on a year where he's trying to build confidence. You know, he's trying to get back into that groove, and he's going to need to get a little bit of a bigger strike zone.
If he wants to get a contract, he's going to need to,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
So it's a contract here. He should be doing everything he wants to try, you know, can to try and get ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Any edge you can get, you got to take in a contract here. You're absolutely right. Let's talk about Media Day. We want to again thank Brian Srabian for helping us get in there and talk to a bunch of guys. And you know what I'm finding is that a lot of what the guys talked about when we were at Media Day, I'm seeing on the field. You know, I'm seeing what Brandon Belt was talking about with how he's worked on his game. Obviously, he's had a really rough beginning because he got sick, but
he got really sick.
Yeah, but I watched some of those exhibition games and some of those late spring training games, and his swing looked real tight. Hopefully, he didn't completely lose everything. I mean, he got a hit yesterday, and he doesn't look terrible at the plate. So, you know, hopefully that hasn't. But
I mean, it's that same thing that seems to happen to Belt sometimes. He just hits some balls straight at guys. I mean, you saw a couple of them where just like, you know, screaming shot to the first baseman. And I think that Alan Craig probably would have lost his head if he hadn't gotten his glove up in time on that one. You know,
absolutely.
It's
not just that, but, you know, Lincecum talked about how he was feeling stronger. He had changed his routine in the offseason, and he definitely looked stronger. His fastball was zipping a little more, even though he wasn't controlling it. But he may have also been overthrowing. Who knows? It was first game out there on a big, you know, big year for him.
Yeah, seven walks in five innings. I mean, that's just, you know, zero runs, fine, but that's unacceptable.
Bad. Yeah.
And that's just.
But then you also have guys, Romo, Bumgarner. We talked to them and really got a sense that these guys are ready for this year. Zito, especially. I mean, Zito had his game face on at Media Day. I don't know if you noticed that, but he looks strong right now. I mean,
Maybe some of it's just confidence. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe he just needed those postseason starts. But he does not look like the same pitcher that we've been seeing.
Well, forget the velocity. Everyone talks about the velocity. Oh my God, throws 84, 85. Forget that. Yeah, it doesn't matter. This is
if you throw a 12-6 curveball at 70 something, and then you throw an 84 mile an hour fastball, it's all you need.
Exactly. And the other breaking stuff besides the curveball is looking much sharper, and it's actually he's not hanging those pitches anymore. You know,
and that's really what was missing.
Yeah. So all he had to do was be able to mix and match with his stuff correctly, and he seems to be able to do that now.
And some of it was he didn't have the fastball velocity became an issue because he would need it when he didn't have that breaking stuff, and with some of the breaking stuff breaking again, the look is totally different.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Chad, anything else that you could take away from Media Day that you've seen on the field so far?
You know, Lincecum, one of the questions I asked him, it was pretty interesting. Wendy Thurm, Hanging Sliders, had just asked him a question about his velocity drop and, you know, how he was trying to get guys out. And he said, really, it's just about the timing differential between the fastball and his changeup. And so, you know, just keep him off balance because of the differential in speed. And so I followed up on that question. I said, okay, well, we all know that your fastball has, you know, declined from, you know, the mid-90s down to the low 90s, and you're talking about keeping hitters off balance with the timing. Yeah, or lower with the timing, so with your changeup. So, you know, you have to have a large gap there to keep that timing differential there. So have you slowed down your curveball at all? No.
Yeah, he was very matter-of-fact on that.
I was just kind of standing there, you know. A little intimidated, just, you know, interviewing him and just kind of going, boy, I really want to follow up with this question going, do you see where I'm trying to go with this?
Yeah. You know,
but,
though,
he didn't need it pointed out. I think he understood my point and just didn't want to talk about it.
Much like Barry Zito, though, I think you get to a point where you've heard these questions over and over again.
Yeah.
And they have to wear on you a little bit. And you have to say, look, I gotta act like I'm confident. I gotta act like I got this going on. And, you know, I think it's just kind of because Tim wasn't like that when he was rocking the Cy Young seasons. You know, he was very, very personable in all of his interviews. And it wasn't until he had a really rough year that he kind of, you know, his interviews turned a little bit more. His answers got shorter. His eyes weren't looking up, and he was just kind of a different guy. In the locker room. So, but you know, I do think like the mannerisms that he used to have, like, I think he'll get back. I think he'll get back to the old Timmy. I think the confidence level looked different. Even though he was not locating that fastball, he didn't look like he lost. You know, like sometimes
he would have
look
that
like
look like a scared deer a little bit sometimes.
Like
last
sometimes
season,
he would look. He would just
like,
start
this
looking
is all over
off
my head right now.
He would start looking off into the stands, the scoreboard, and just, you know, kind of looked like he didn't really care or something. And he'd never got that look even when he was struggling really hard to locate those pitches. So that was a good sign for me. And I got to say, giving him no earned runs, you take away the pass ball, you take away the Posey error, it wouldn't have looked as painful of an outing, I don't think. You know. So I think things are looking up for him. Let's move on. Let's talk about this week. Obviously, we've played two series. We've split the all six games, 3-3, but we won one series, lost to St. Louis. And we might have lost this. I got to say this. We might have lost to St. Louis because they may have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder having to watch the Giants celebrate all
well,
3 days.
And I think that the Giants doing the celebrating is a little bit of a throw off. You know, you got a routine that you get in, and all of a sudden it's like, well, instead of a routine, why don't we all stand on the field for like 20 minutes watching a flag go up?
Yeah.
And on the one hand, none of them, I think, would have traded that for anything.
Oh, hell no. Yeah.
And I don't think, the Cardinals, a lot of whom are a similar team to the one that won the World Series in 2011, are probably also not going to be like, no, you can't have that. Like, everybody on the field goes, yeah, you earned it, you can have it. But yeah, it's going to throw you off a little when you have something like that before all three games in the series.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Giants really looked flat on Sunday. And, you know, there may have been a little bit of a hangover from, you know, sitting there celebrating for a pretty long time.
I'll put it out there, though. The Cardinals played well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely they did.
Yadier Molina had a hell of a game on Sunday. I'm not going to take anything away from that. You know, you don't want to go in there and be like, no, the Giants lost because they had the ceremonies. But, you know, they definitely looked flat, and St. Louis took advantage very effectively.
No,
so,
absolutely.
I mean, that's the Cardinals look good. I don't like them, but they look good.
No, they're a scary team. If their pitching holds up, I think that's the question mark coming into the season for them is if the pitching is actually going to be as strong as it could be. And, you know, if it is, then they're going to be a team to reckon with for sure. So it's no terrible thing to have lost two out of three to the Cardinals, obviously. I think we can all hang our hats a little bit, though, on taking two out of three from the Dodgers, especially after Kershaw single-handedly beat the Giants on opening day.
So, I thought it was nice to see, sort of new look Bumgarner come back the next game and just go, I can do that. And I mean, other than not hitting the home run, I mean, Bumgarner pretty much did a lot of the same things Kershaw did.
Yeah.
He's another lefty. He's tall. He's got a scruffy beard. He just has that kind of funky three-quarter delivery. But besides that, you know, people are going to be making comparisons between those two for a long time now that they're starting to see the similarities, I think.
And they're in the same division, so you're going to see those guys match up quite a bit.
You're going to see them face up sometimes. Yeah. I mean, especially depending on where, because the Kershaw versus Lincecum comparisons happened a lot, but with Bumgarner, like, they're similar dudes.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and the fact is, Kershaw's the one, you know, he's the ace of their staff, and Bumgarner's the number two guy in our staff. So, because of off days and everything, they are going to end up matching up a lot throughout the season. Mm-hmm. So, those are going to be some fun games to watch. I can't wait to see that. And we're going to play the Dodgers a lot. So, I'm really looking forward to some of those games. But, you know, the Dodgers had to feel really good after winning that first game. And it was really nice to just kind of smack them back down to earth and say, nope. We're still the top dogs in the West.
Where's your pitching depth?
Yeah, exactly. You got that
all
one
in
guy.
The front.
You got that one guy, but there's four games in between all of his pitches or all of his starts. So, that was a really fun series to watch, especially with the Giants bounce back. I mean, we remember last year, right? We lost four in a row, and it was Barry Zito who came out and pitched a complete game shutout to turn it around. So the fact that we didn't lose four in a row to start this year, that feels good. That feels damn good. Pence, the guy that people were very concerned about, and we didn't even sign him to a multi-year contract pretty much because we were a little concerned about how he's going to hit in this ballpark. He is absolutely smoking the ball right now. Three home runs over the first seven games. He's batting right around 300. He had a double yesterday as well. I mean, he's lighting it up right now.
Yeah, he's stinging the ball,
You can hear the announcers talking about it. I mean, he's getting a little more air on balls now. I mean, what he was doing before was just, you know, ground out, number, pop, ground out. I mean,
well, striking out on those low and away pitches, too. Like,
playing that, he's a little more selective, doesn't hurt.
Yeah, so he really looks like he's got more of a plan at the plate this year. And there could be something to be said about the pressure of coming over and having to be the guy who saves us and brings us, you know, through to the World Series and all that. But now he's just a part of this team.
But then he did it,
then he did it, yeah. But now he's literally just a part of this team. You know, we get a full year to watch Hunter Pence play right field. And he's going to figure out he's going to Nate Sherholtz a few balls out there. He's going to throw guys out trying to stretch doubles out of singles because he's going to learn how to play that funky right field. And he does
have a good arm, let's face it.
He really does.
A couple times. He's got a solid arm.
Although I do miss Sherholtz gunning the hell out. Oh, my God.
Sherholtz didn't just have a good arm. Sherholtz, like, somebody mounted RoboCop on Sherholtz.
Yeah, he had a video game power up on that arm. That was he's ridiculous, and you know the Cubs should be very happy to have him playing on their team right now, because I do miss that guy. You know, I really wish he'd been able to put the put the whole thing at the plate together. If he had been able to do that, he would have been a fantastic.
Or we all thought it was going to happen at some point, and it just
we all did.
To realize
when he was streaky, he'd be on so hard that you'd just be like, "Where? Why have we not been playing him this whole time?" And then he would go cold, and you go, "Oh yeah."
And he'd go ice cold. I mean, sub 100.
That's the tough thing is it was there was no like middle ground with Schierholz.
No.
It was just he was on, or you were just kind of going, "Oh God, here's an out."
Yeah. So now, okay. Pence is hot. Panda's pretty hot. Pagan is pretty hot to start the year off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those are some
Crawford,
guys that
I'll
we
actually
needed.
Say. I'd say Crawford's been pretty decently
Well, Crawford's
hot.
Been putting good wood on the ball. He's had some Adam balls, but, you know, obviously we expect somewhere around last season, maybe a little better would be great.
You know,
but
we've seen a couple of his hits, and they haven't all been cheapies. I mean, you know, Crawford looks hot, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got some guys who are swinging the bat well, but we've got some guys who are really ice cold right now. Scudero, namely, because we all are kind of waiting for that 362 hitter to come back.
Mm-hmm. Scudero is kind of starting to look like people have figured him out a little bit, I feel like. And I think he has some things he's got to figure out with his timing and his aggressiveness that I think are changing a little.
He's struck out a lot more in this first week.
A lot of
them
have been called strikes, though.
Yeah.
He's still not striking out swinging. That's still not a part of his game. But guys are starting to realize he's vulnerable to that low pitch. If he's not sure where the bottom of the strike zone is, you know, you throw it down there, and that's where a lot of the called strikes I've been seeing at least have been getting him out.
Yeah. But, Chad, what about Posey? Do you see anything with Posey going on? Because he looks a little out of sorts to start this year off.
I can't put my finger on it. It just seems he has a long swing already, but a quick swing.
Yeah.
It looks like his swing just isn't as quick, but it's just as long. So it just seems like it's throwing off his timing a little bit. So he's swinging through a lot of balls.
Yeah, he does look like he's been late on a few. And I know he likes to inside out the ball the other way. But the problem is if you're, you know, just a millisecond behind on that type of swing, you're fouling it off or you're completely missing it.
You can't inside out if you don't have a quick bat.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just seems like it's a hair late.
Yeah.
It's just my impression. And, you know, he struck out two more times tonight. So now he's hitting about .174. And, you know, I think fans have to realize that any one of these players hits under 200 for a week or two at a stretch multiple times throughout
the course
of the season.
At the beginning, you see the numbers.
Exactly. Yeah. But at the beginning of the season, it's when you see that batting average of, oh, my God, he's only hit 174. Well, yeah, when he was hitting .350, you know, he'd go a week hitting 174.
Yeah, and he'd go down to .340.
Yeah, his average would be .340.
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah.
So, no big deal. These guys are going to be fine. It's just strange to see all four or five of them kind of start off this cold.
And the fact is, we're still able
tonight,
to.
So now he's down to .111.
Yeah.
Well, and Scudero was pretty consistent during the end of the season last year. But the thing is, you never know. You know, it's extended streaks are still streaks. And so, I mean, having the full season is going to be kind of nice, but there are going to be times like this. So We are pretty adept at hitting the panic button when we really want to, but I think it's safe to say, especially with Scudero and Posey, I think we're going to hold off hitting that panic button for at least a couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Brandon Belt's been sick, so we don't really have any reason to be worried about him.
And he's stung a lot of balls.
Now Torres, on the other hand, we all thought that in 2010 he had this absolutely lights out season. He had .262, I think, that year. Mm-hmm. Right. So we, you know,
but
in our minds,
he was effective from that leadoff position starting the game off. And because we'd see him do that and because we knew how fast he was,
sure,
I think everybody developed a really favorable opinion of him, because that first at bat that you watch, you're paying more attention than, say, in the fifth when the score is, you know, lopsided one way or the other. You don't notice it the same way.
But in I think in a lot of people's minds, they thought Torres, like, I bet if you ask a lot of more of the fair weather type fan, how good Torres' batting average was in 2010, they're not going to say .262.
No,
they're going to think it was higher. Yeah, they're going to think it was higher because, you know, he was there for a while and he slumped towards the end of the year. But, you know, if he hits anywhere near that, and we're expecting, I think, both him and Blanco to be about .250 hitters who are fast as hell and play really good defense in left field. And so, to me, I'm not that worried if he's starts off a little cold. I think he's going to finish with those numbers.
Well, I think we have to face that Torres and Blanco we're going to see as interchangeable parts of the offense for at least the first like third of the season, and that one or the other of them has the chance at any given point of taking a job from the other one.
Sure.
And it's just going to depend on how they perform.
Well,
so
it's going to be who's hot, and obviously the right-left matchups are going to matter. But I
because
think when one
the two of them
hot,
profile out as similar players for the most part, especially at this point as Torres gets a little bit older, he's dropped maybe a step. He and Blanco profile out for different reasons as being similar.
Yeah,
and
I think Blanco is a stronger fielder.
Really,
Blanco's a little stronger of a fielder, and he's a little bit more
right now,
pure speed. But I think Torres has a little bit more pop in his bat, and you know, so it's a mix and match type of situation. So I'm not too concerned about that. But either way, the fact is we're 500 with a bunch of guys who are cold, who we didn't expect to be cold. So I got to say that we should feel okay. We don't need, don't push the panic button to anybody.
Can now, I throw out, though, in the area of cold, is anybody worried about Jose Mijares?
No, because, you know, we have enough depth in our bullpen that we're going to be able to give guys a chance to work through problems. We're going to be able to give guys chances not on game day. We're going to be able to put guys in and say garbage time type situations to work through stuff. We're not going to have to rely on one single guy because we got so much depth in our bullpen. So I think we're going to be just fine. I don't expect Mijares to struggle throughout the year. He's a solid lefty out of the bullpen.
It's just I feel like Mijares overperformed just a little over the postseason last year, and I feel like we're going to see that a little more this year. But I think that as a situational lefty between him and Lopez, it's not going to be much of an issue unless he gets put into situations like he did yesterday. And that's when I think we're going to see it a little more.
We have plenty of lefties that we can go to right now, so I think it's okay.
we got a couple lefties.
Yeah.
You need some lefties? We got some lefties.
So let's move on to the big question. And this is the one area I do think there might be cause for a little concern, and that's some of the starting pitchers. So so far, we're really talking about Kane and Vogelsong here. Lincecum won his game, no earned runs, obviously.
It's been one game. You know, Kane and Vogelsong, Kane we've at least seen twice.
Yeah, and Kane's lost twice, but he didn't pitch like a losing pitcher.
He
didn't actually lose that game, right? It was Mijares who lost that game.
So, no, he didn't take the loss. And also, really, if you're just talking about pitching, he didn't lose that game.
No. Posey just, RBI.
I'll say that Kershaw won it. But
oh yay, Posey came through. Yeah, he has 6 Ks this year already and 24 at bats. Oof, his average is 250.
He's been swinging through a lot of stuff, though. It's true. It's like we talked about earlier, but he didn't swing through that.
So, Chad, were you watching the game on TV yesterday?
Unfortunately, no. I had my daughter's play, but
fortunately, so no, I only saw. Sir.
Yeah, fortunately, no. Well, the problem is, okay, so Ben, I don't know if you got the same sense that I got, but Kane mowed down the lineup the first time through.
Oh, yeah. And no, I mean, you're the fourth inning, you peek and you look and you go, oh, look, there's zero in the hits call.
Yeah,
and then
nine up, nine down. Nine up, nine down. And when it's Kane, you're obviously, as a fan who has watched Kane throw a perfect game, you're thinking, could it be? Yeah. I don't want to say anything. Yeah. But he goes and gives up 9 earned runs in the fourth inning. And I cannot imagine that's ever happened, anything close to that in Kane's career.
Will, which part of the park were you sitting in?
I was sitting on third base side in the second deck.
Okay, I was third base side in standing room. So we had kind of a similar angle, I think.
Yeah.
So I couldn't see location that well, and I haven't gone back to watch too many clips of that inning because I don't want to deal with it. It's hard to say. I didn't get to see whether he was hanging a lot of stuff, but it definitely looked like there were a couple of cheapies that got through, but there were also
some
balls that got smacked pretty hard.
Yeah, there was a couple. The ground rule double was hit real hard.
That was a boomer.
And Beltran's single was hit really hard. There's a lot of hard hit balls, but there's also, you know, I think it was Molina who hit a ground ball that went through. That could have been a double play if it moves, you know, 3 feet to the left or right.
Right.
And instead, it's another single. So, I mean, there's definitely a little bit of that bad luck factor of balls just finding holes. But the fact is,
it was
looked
bracketed
to me,
by some good hits, though.
Yeah,
that's a problem.
It looked
it's like
to
you
me
can limit those, but
like he was up. That's what it looked like to me. And I don't know if you noticed this, but in the bottom of the third, he bunted and put down a really good bunt and kind of hustled down to first. And I was wondering if something tweaked there because he looked like a completely different pitcher from one inning to the next. And, obviously he's not going to say, oh, I tweaked something running to first. He's going to keep pitching. He's perfect through 3 innings. But I don't know. Something changed. And he was a completely different pitcher. So if anybody
noticed
something.
Yeah, and I mean, he hadn't pitched from the stretch yet that whole game, so it was hard to compare anything.
Yeah.
But yeah. You know, it just looked like from the stretch he was rushing it a little.
If anybody noticed anything, tweet at us because I would love I would love to know.
Yeah, I mean, since we didn't get to see the TV, none of us got to see the TV coverage of it. We have a different angle on it. So if you spotted something that makes more sense with what happened with Kane, we're curious to get some other
If there's any insight to that, because I was too busy looking at my ring too. So,
well, he started the season.
My friend was holding on to it, so you know, I couldn't.
9 innings and no runs, and I think the only rough inning he had prior to that was the very first inning of the first game of the season.
Yeah,
when he loaded the bases against the Dodgers, and he squirmed his way out of that. But you go 9 nine shutout innings, and then give up 9 runs in 2/3 of an inning.
Yeah,
that's instant pretty law precipitous averages, fall off.
Which, yeah, by the way, the fallout of this may mean no All-Star appearance this year, because he's going to be fighting to lower his ERA now for the entire rest of the first half.
A couple of Kane-style outings could make that drop in a hurry, so it's hard to say, but 9 is hard to get back from.
He's not a relief pitcher who's, you know, got one inning at a time to try to whittle this thing down, but seriously, I mean, it's going to be real tough to get that down to an All-Star level ERA.
Right. But you know, on the other hand, we saw like one or two games like that take Vogelsong out of consideration for the All-Star game last year. So it's
no, absolutely. It doesn't take much, because there's going to be guys who have fantastic years, and this is always how it works. You know,
but you never know. Maybe this is going to be Bumgarner's turn.
It could be. It could absolutely be. He's
you know, we've sent one starting pitcher a year for the, maybe it's Zito's turn to get it back. You never know.
Oh yeah, I would love that. How about Zito and Bumgarner? Let's get
Zito
both
and, Zito and Bumgarner as the All-Star. They're the only ones that haven't been All-Stars in the recent San Francisco Renaissance era. So hey,
it's true. All right, so let's armchair manager this.
Maybe Gordon Kickham comes up and.
Let's armchair manager this situation, and would you have pulled Kane sooner than Bochy did? Because Bochy pulled him at 7 runs in, 2 runners on.
Mm-hmm.
And is that too long to leave your guy out there? I mean, it's the 4th inning.
I'm asking you guys.
Yeah.
Because it's Kane and it's the second game of the season, I'm kind of in line with what Bochy did. I don't know. One batter earlier, you want to say that in hindsight, but it's Kane. You don't feel like that's going to be a running thing with him until you watch it unfold like that.
No, I think honestly, he didn't have a lot of pitches thrown at that time. I think he was about maybe 75 or 80. So obviously he's got gas left in the tank if he's anything like normal Kane. But
he's not figuring it out.
No, but after 7 runs across the plate, I think it's 7 runs in 1 inning across the plate. I think it's a good rule of thumb that you pull that pitcher, whoever that may be. I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's Cy Young himself. I think when 7 runs cross the plate, you've gone too far. So I would say you could probably say you have a real strong argument that when 5 cross the plate and you're down 3, that's a good time to go ahead and say
that. The thing is, though, when 5 cross the plate and you're like a number 2 through 5 guy in the rotation, I think that you go. But when it's Kane, I feel like, you know, it's like saying, oh, well, Justin Verlander has allowed a bunch of runs. Maybe Jim Leland has a shorter hook. But I think it's the same thing. When you have an ace on the mound, you have the feeling they might figure it out and keep you in it. And then that last shot, you're just like, all right, you know what?
Yeah, we were not in it anymore. But here was the silver lining of that game was Chad Godin comes in and pitches really, really well for several innings in a row, and really settled the game down for the time that he was in. So, you know, the
not
good news
mattered,
is
not much at that point, but I mean,
no. But the good news is, I think we've identified the guy who can do that for us this year, and he really, really looks strong. His stuff is really good. He's got a nice pop to his fastball. Breaking stuff is sharp. This guy looks like a really good pickup for us. So I was really happy to see him come in and kind of settle things down for at least a little while.
Godin is one of those guys who does that, though. He'll look really good for a bit and then sort of like start getting shaky.
Yeah.
But usually, I mean, if he's, you know, when I've seen us play against Godin, usually he's looked shaky way sooner than this. So there is at least reason to believe that he's going to slot in with this team and this staff and with Rigetti well.
Yeah, you got to say, though, so, he didn't have Rigetti.
It's a different sitch. Nope. You know,
Rigetti is clearly
didn't have Billy Hayes, but.
Yeah. Rigetti's clearly shown that he's a guy who knows how to handle the staff and knows how to get guys into the right arm slot, into the right mechanics, and pitching at their best. So this could be a really good breakout year for this guy. I mean, I think he's got a quality arm, and it'll be fun to watch him kind of gel with the rest of that bullpen. So I'm excited about that. All right, let's tweet at me, brah. Chad, You've got some of these.
We're already there. Well, tonight was the national championship game for college basketball, and so they had the obligatory shots of the sad Michigan cheerleaders on the sideline. So a couple
darn
of people.
Darn it, Michigan. Excuse me.
Wolverine fan, huh? No, well, I just thought it was funny.
Went,
a couple of people.
Same reason I like Detroit. What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
I guess it's like an inside joke, just because I was thinking the same thing, and then I looked over at Twitter and saw Wendy Thurman and Barry, a sports guy, tweet out, "Give me some shots of some sad cheerleader stat and obligatory sad cheerleader photo .tumblr." So I thought it was just funny that I was thinking that, oh, we got to frame those, we got to get those, we got to put them on Tumblr, and then boom, they manifested themselves on Twitter. So there you go.
I'm going to point out. And during a Tweet At Me Bruh segment here, that Nicole Vogelsong is now following Torture Cast.
Yes.
So we win.
Right, I don't know what exactly you're trying to rub in people's face.
I'm not trying to rub anything in anyone's face. I'm just excited about that. That's the coolest thing ever to me. So
Ben, have you direct messaged her yet?
No.
You have the opportunity.
No.
All right. I'm telling you, just send her a DM with you wearing the Vogelsong All-Star jersey. Just send her that and just make her day.
I hate both of you so much.
Just make her day. All right. Well, I don't know if she listens or if she's just following us on Twitter, but if you're out there, thank you for the follow. Super sweet. I really like that she's totally into it, and she tweets all the time about what's going on with the team and what's going on with Brian and everything. So stoked. All right. Let's move on. Our new favorite guy. I'm going with Chad Godin. I think, you know, honestly, there's a lot of guys that came back from last year and everything, and these are old favorite guys for me. And he was one of the guys that I was looking at, and I was wondering really what he was going to show me when I get to root for him. And so far he showed me really good stuff. He's pitched really well. And speaking of pitching really well, though, Romo just gave up his first base runner of the year. Holy crap. I know. That's terrible. That's the end of an era. All right, so anyway, Chad Godin, great.
It's over, guys.
Great pickup. Looks really good. Stuff looks great. Looks like he'll maybe become a fixture.
Rutledge has been cold, too. That's no fun.
Yeah. But that's my new favorite guy. Chad, how about you?
Nick Noonan.
Noonan.
Noonan. Noonan. Sorry, Noonan. I just love the name. And he got his first hit yesterday.
What's a Noonian?
So congrats to him as a 5 or 6 year minor leaguer.
Yeah.
To come up and get his first hit. Granted, it was an insignificant part of a game, but hey, you'll still take your first hit. Go frame that sucker. So congrats.
No, you
to
know
him.
What? He did it in the first week of the season. He didn't come out and go like 0-20 to start off his career. So
he's 1-4 right now.
Exactly.
He's 250 in the major leagues.
Exactly. Not too shabby. Not too shabby at all. All right, Ben, favorite guy, new favorite guy.
I'm actually going to go with Brandon Crawford just because I've got to watch him play defense a lot lately, and I didn't realize how much I missed it.
Oh, he's made some fantastic plays already.
He has made some absolutely stunning plays, and just he'll spin and just get so much arm on that ball. It's pretty ridiculous to watch sometimes with just the accuracy that he has. I mean, you know, Brandon Bell to make anybody look like Brandon Crawford at first base. You know, he's pretty darn sweet with the leather himself, but just Crawford has just... The guy looks like he could run, you know, track and play shortstop at the same time. I mean, it's hard to believe what you're watching sometimes.
Well, we're going to see some real good shortstop play in this series because, you know, Tulowitzki on the Rockies and Crawford, both of these guys throw across their body better than almost anybody else in the major leagues. And
I mean, do you guys have a little doubt that he's going to win a gold glove at least
at some
time in his career, if not multiple
points? It's going to be very soon.
It's going to depend on his bat because that's how you get the attention. But I think that a lot of people saw him in the World Series last year, and I think that's going to really get him a lot of just acclaim. Managers are going to notice that, and I think they're already starting to.
And there's ways to avoid the bat having anything to do with it, and that's just by being absolutely lights out for a full season.
Yeah, lights out in 250, you have just as good a chance of a gold glove as anybody else.
He's going to need a couple of
web gems.
Once he gets that going, everybody sees him in the top 10 plays of the year. You know, he's going to be up there for sure.
I'm going to throw out, though, I got an honorary mention for a new favorite guy. It was just really good to see Aubrey Huff at the ring ceremony. I mean, there's a lot of people who will probably like tilt their heads at him getting the 2012 ring, even though we all know, you know, you were there, therefore you get it. You were on the team.
He was on the roster in all
three
playoff
series.
So,
I mean, not being used doesn't mean
obviously you get it. Yeah.
But it's just
who else
it was,
got
just,
one?
It was really good to see him back, though. I mean, he ended up retiring, and so he, since he doesn't have a team, he didn't feel bad about being able to come up and show up for that ceremony. And clearly, San Francisco holds no ill will towards him because he's always going to be Aubrey Huff.
No, we're patching in some TV or KMBR here, aren't we?
What's that?
Are you patching in some Giants coverage here?
No. No, are you hearing it?
Oh, you know what it is?
Are you?
I have my little mini game day on. I think because it's near the end of the game, it's pumping through my audio.
Okay. So you know what, though? Aubrey Huff showed up.
I got crickets. Yeah. What's going on?
So Aubrey Huff shows up, and a notable no-show is Brian Wilson did not show up after he got the invite.
You know, somebody did point out, though, that it's it can be a little weird for a guy who's still active and not on the team to show up. Like, they'll feel a little like they won't belong, and Wilson is trying to concentrate on rehabbing. So
it's true.
A lot
and
of people,
also,
I think, are making this a bigger deal than it is. But
I don't think it's a big deal. I don't think it's a big deal, but I think, you know, Brian Wilson is somebody that I think a lot of fans wanted to see, and I hope he realizes that the fans here wanted to see him. Nobody cares that he's active and not on the team or on any team. We just love
Nobody
Brian Wilson
in this
town.
Nobody thinks he cares either, to be honest.
Yeah. We just love Brian Wilson in this town, and I think a lot of people were bummed that he wasn't there. So,
It would have been nice, but... Yeah.
I was upset Huff was the only surprise. I felt like there had to be another one hiding somewhere, and then there wasn't. I was kind of upset about it.
Yeah. I heard Melky Cabrera's ring had extra diamonds on it. It was like a World Series ring on steroids. Did you guys hear about this? Did you guys hear about this? Anybody?
I hate you so much.
It's like a Jay Leno joke.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself. All right, let's hate on somebody. Chad.
Whoever the hell designed those home gold jerseys, because I'm all for the gold trim. I got one myself. But I just, there's something about the SF on the chest at home. I know this is ticky-tack, but I've always been kind of a jersey guy and kind of
We did the gold Giants jersey before. You can't just repeat the same thing again.
See, that's the thing, right? That's getting into their head. I think that's what they were thinking. They're like, well, we already did the Giants block lettering with the gold, so we
this one was really popular.
SF at home.
Why don't we do an orange jersey with gold on it?
Let's do the Giants with the script before we do the SF for the home.
I agree. I think gold is a little, unless it's like the Niners, you know, gold is a little tacky on a jersey. It just doesn't look right to me.
I just don't like the SF on the home jersey.
I like the gold on the caps. I don't like. I was never a huge fan of the gold on the jerseys, but I mean, it's not what I was going to complain about the reason we were using it. So, no. Give that World Series title back so we stop having gold jerseys. This is ridiculous.
I don't want to
return that right now. Jersey. You know what? You call up the Rangers and say you put gold on your stupid uniforms.
I'm going to hate on Clayton Kershaw, and I think everybody knows why. By the way, the police are here. They are, no, it's a fireman. I don't know if you can hear that in the background, but they're swinging by my house real quick. But I'm going to hate on Clayton Kershaw because why not? This guy, you know, it's going to be really annoying to have him on the Dodgers, and they're going to get him for a long time, I think, because they have enough money to just do whatever the hell they want, and why wouldn't they want this guy for a really long time? So I figure we're going to see this guy against us plenty of years to come, and really pisses me off. So, yeah, Clayton Kershaw, I hate you. There you go. Ben?
You know, I couldn't think of anybody that I'm really particularly mad at that you hadn't already mentioned. So basically Kershaw.
Yeah.
So after thinking about it for a while, I'm just going to hate on Jose Castillo because I never got the chance to hate on him before since we didn't start the podcast until 2010. And I really don't like that guy. So I'm just going to hate on Jose Castillo.
All right. Why not?
Joe Castle, we hate you.
That's, you know what, I'm 100% behind you. Let's hate on that guy.
And I'm done. Let's never talk about it again.
By the way, the Giants just won. Romo 4-for-4 in save opportunities. So and
struck out Willie.
No, but he's got whip now, guys. That's the problem.
he's got a whip.
He can never get it back to zero.
That's true. You know what though? But after Wheezy loading the bases and then getting out of it, this is pretty nice, I gotta say.
Pretty nice.
This
one
is
base
pretty
runner, four
good.
Innings. Not too bad.
All right, so why will we win it all? Chad, you wanna start us off?
Because they have the home gold jersey.
Oh my god, come on, man. First you hate on it, and then you cite it as a reason why we will win it all.
You a flip-flopper, sir. This is America, so that's a huge insult.
No,
Chad,
you know,
Obama over here.
They brought 21 of the 25 back. I mean, you know, they have almost the same team as last year and probably trimmed the fat a little bit, so why not?
Absolutely. All right,
I know. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Uh-oh.
Damn, Ben. Really? All right, I'm just going to go ahead and piggyback on yours because this team should be better than last year with no Huff. Torres back. Lincecum can't be as bad as last year. He's got to be a better, I think. Full season of Hunter Pence. And Zito clearly having some sort of weird resurgence in his career. And you look at all those factors, I think this team is better. And if this team is better, then we'll probably win two World Series in just 2013 by itself. So we'll find a way. And why we will win it all.
More ceremonies.
That's right. More ceremonies, more gold on the jersey next year. Ben.
We're just going to make the Cardinals really mad, guys. Going to have a lot of really upset Cardinals.
They shouldn't be mad at us.
The Cardinals were there for the 2011 ceremonies as well.
Yeah.
So. And then they won one. So maybe we're just going to be trading back and forth for the next decade.
The Cardinals should be mad at whoever made the
schedule. Five Giants World Series, five Cardinals World Series done.
Yeah. They should be mad at whoever made the schedule, not us. They
should be mad at whoever designed the jerseys.
There you go. We should always do this stuff when the Dodgers are in town. We should have just done this in Dodger Stadium. We should have been like, screw it, we're having our ceremonies here.
Just take
somebody
over.
Just runs up to the Dodger Stadium thing and just raises a Giants championship. Actually, that would be the best thing
all
ever.
All of a sudden, Chavez Ravine, there's a cable car just comes cruising through the left field doors. And we start passing out rings. That would be beautiful.
Oh, man. You don't even need the orchestra there because you'll just have booze all the time.
Exactly. Here comes Willie Mays ever. And Willie McCovey and Juan Marichal. It'd be fantastic.
Just sitting on the field, sure.
All right, Ben, why will we win it all?
Everybody always likes to yell small sample size, and it's kind of a running joke at this point because so many baseball teams will make their decisions on small sample size, but this is what, 7 games in now? I keep wanting to say 6 because I haven't gotten to actually watch any footage from today's game yet, but I mean, we're 7 games in. I'm not worried about guys. I'm also not excited about guys. Like it's all confirmation bias right now. Like I feel really good about Kane because I've decided I feel really good about Kane. That's really all it is.
Sure. Yeah. No, at this point, it's whatever.
You feel good about him. You quote the 9 innings beforehand. You feel bad about him. You quote the 9 runs in the other inning. I mean, you're in a position right now where you can argue anything because we're 7 games in.
Yeah.
We haven't even seen half the rotation go through more than one turn.
We can't earn a playoff spot in the first week, but you can not dig a hole, and we have not dug a hole. So there you go. I think that in and of itself has to make you feel a little bit good. And I'm just so glad that the guys are back. I'm so glad that we're recording.
Glad baseball is back.
Yeah, I'm ready for this year. I'm sorry, maybe 2011, but I don't think even then I was as ready for a baseball season as I am this year. I'm just so stoked to have these guys back, and really looking forward to being with you guys. And we're gonna be on Twitter, we're gonna be blogging, we're gonna be doing the TortureCast the entire year, and it's gonna be not only do you get a full season of Hunter Pence, you get another full season of the TortureCast. So really looking forward to 2013. I want to thank you guys for joining me, Chad King and Ben Lee. It's really, really good to be back. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us all collectively at TortureCast. You can also follow each one of us individually. Chad is at ChadK21. Ben is at Fried Duck. And I am at Willie Dills. You can also go to our blog at TortureCast.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can donate using PayPal if you want to. You can find us on Podomatic. You can find us almost anywhere. We'll probably be at the ballpark quite a bit. And hopefully in the press box again soon. This has been episode 44 of the TortureCast, a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. We'll see you next time. Boom! A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TortureCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.